Hear the cry of the oppressed. That's the urgent message that two English church leaders have brought back at the end of a 10-day visit to Zimbabwe and South Africa. Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, head of the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales, and Bishop Crispian Hollis, chairman of the International Affairs Department, met with church leaders in the two Southern African nations and visited church-run projects supported by Catholics in the UK. During their short stay in Zimbabwe, Bishop Christian told me he was shocked and moved to see just how desperate life has become for the vast majority of people in a country where the economy, the health and education systems and all vital infrastructures have collapsed. Nowhere, he said, is that more visible than in the sprawling township of Mbare, not far from the capital Harare.
It was a town which I visited a couple of years ago when I went to Zimbabwe, and where I and another bishop celebrated Mass for the community in that parish at that time. It was devastating to see it then, because it was a parish which had been virtually bulldozed of all its infrastructures and its shanty towns and its street traders and so forth in the great clearance operation that the Mugabe government had operated the previous summer. So to go back to that place again was to revisit something which had been most striking 2 years ago. And I have to say that when we visited this time, things are worse than they were 2 years ago. There is extreme poverty in that parish. There is a great incidence of disease and HIV/AIDS. And there is sheer hunger as well. And we spent a good deal of time, not so much with the people, but with the parish priest, who's the former Jesuit provincial in Zimbabwe, a German priest, and just listened to him. And when we came away from listening to him and the way in which he cared for his people and the conditions under which he was working, frankly, we were kind of speechless. We didn't know what to say, really, to one another. And as we drove away in the car, there was a kind of silence in the car, because it had been most moving in a way, been most terrible in another way, but to see, you know, that pastor working with such faith and dedication and love for his people in impossible conditions was something which was the church at its very finest, I think. We then went on to a hospice for children who are infected with HIV/AIDS. And there are, of course, orphans. The number of orphans in Zimbabwe, indeed in Southern Africa, is a very high number, because parents die and the children are left, but they also often carry the infection. So this was a hospice run by the Little Company of Mary, they call them the Blue Nuns. And Sister Margaret, who was in charge of that, has a number of children actually in care, in bed care in the hospice, but she also operates a team of 70 or so people who work out in the townships and in the so-called homes of the people who are orphans and who are infected. And it's just, again, a remarkable work of caring for the sick and the poor and the diseased. And again, something which, again, leaves one kind of speechless with admiration and amazement at such faith in such adverse circumstances.
It's true to say, isn't it, that there are a growing numbers of desperately poor and sick people almost entirely dependent on handouts from the churches for their survival?
I think that's true. And certainly in terms of, I mean, if you look at Zimbabwe today, the bishops told us that the health service has collapsed, in a sense. And it's very difficult for, unless you've got money, to get any medical assistance. Things like antiretroviral drugs are distributed by this particular clinic that we visited, this particular hospice that we visited, but it's very difficult to get hold of them in other ways. I think so. The issue of those drugs, which are crucial in combating HIV/AIDS, provided the other conditions of life are properly there, that's almost something which is out of the reach of ordinary people.
This situation has been going on for so long now. People must have almost given up hope of change, haven't they?
You'd have thought so, but in a curious way, there's an extraordinary faith among the people there. And this, again, was moving. 2 years ago, the Mass we celebrated in that township, which was pretty devastated then, was again something which I shall never forget, because it was a Mass of celebration in most appalling circumstances. And there was a faith there which was palpable in a way, and in a curious way, a joy that was palpable as well. the Archbishop told us that church attendances on the whole are rising in Zimbabwe. Now, that's partly to do with the fact that the church is a source of help and charity as well, but it's also it's a place where celebration can take place in the most awful circumstances, and I think that again is a very strong witness to the life of the gospel, which the church is proclaiming in so many different ways, most particularly in the most practical ways of care and compassion for the sick and for the poor.
Bishops there in Zimbabwe have issued a very strong pastoral letter about a year ago calling on the government to hear the cry of the oppressed people in their country. Is there anything else they can do, do you think, to try and push for change? Is there anything more that the church should be doing there?
I think the church has been remarkable in the witness that it's given, and that pastoral letter issued last Easter was indeed a very powerful letter, bravely written in a very complex scenario, I think, and therefore it was a letter which engendered a certain amount of opposition and division, even within the community of the faithful, because there are those, obviously, in a situation such as Zimbabwe is, who will be more supportive of the government than others, and they may be Catholics as well. And so the bishops risked a certain amount of conflict, certainly with the government as well as among their own people. But basically what they're now looking for, because there are discussions and debates going on about a new constitution and there are elections coming up, what is desperately needed and what the bishops are calling for as loudly and as bravely as they can is a new constitution, a constitution which will incorporate justice with good government and which also will respect the basic rights of the people, especially the poor, who are the vast majority, of course. That's a campaign which is ongoing, and they have their voice in that, and they have their voice with other Christian leaders in that as well, in that process, which hopefully will lead eventually to a new constitution, though sadly it seems not before the elections take place on March 29th.
The former finance minister has said he will challenge Mugabe in these presidential elections. Does that represent a glimmer of hope, do you think?
I think it must do, because 2 years ago we asked the question of the bishops, what happens when the president goes? What happens when Mugabe goes? And their view then was that the official opposition was not really in a position to make a serious challenge to the presidency or for the presidency. And they said then that they thought that whatever happened after the president gone, or President Mugabe had gone, would come from within the ruling party. And that seems to be the way that is happening.
You were clearly very moved by these experiences, and yet, as you say, it's a very complex situation. How do you begin to communicate this to people back in the UK, back in your own diocese, to try and encourage them to support the oppressed people in Zimbabwe?
I mean, all I can do is to tell my story in a way, and that I should be doing around the diocese during Lent. It's kind of not a bad Lenten exercise in a way. If we're on about prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, then let's put that in the hands of the people of Zimbabwe, really, and put it in the Lord's hands for them. But I will tell the story. That's what I can do. And I'd be often quite diffident about voicing my, strictly speaking, political opinions, because I'm no expert in that field, but I know what I've seen, and I know that for sure what I've seen has, in a very large measure, to be laid at the feet of the present government in Zimbabwe. There's no question about that.
What do the church leaders in Zimbabwe expect from Christians in the West? What else can we do to help?
But that's a good question, and it's one we asked the Archbishop as well. Of course, the obvious things, in a sense, are prayer and the sense of community and communion within the church worldwide. I mean, that in a sense goes without saying. On the more political level, the bishops are kind of saying that the whole policy, particularly from the EU, of sanctions on the government, targeted sanctions on 200 people in the Zimbabwe government, is actually not helpful, because the government simply has easy ways of avoiding the sanctions, and they will blame all the chaos that is rampant in the country on the fact that the EU are imposing sanctions upon Zimbabwe. So I think, all things considered, the bishops would want us, if we could, to raise some sort of voice in the corridors of power in Brussels and wherever, to get the EU to look again at policy of sanctions. I think sanctions anywhere, applied anywhere, is always a pretty blunt instrument, and in the end it probably hurts the poor, who it's intended to help, more than it hurts those against whom it's specifically targeted. So that's one thing that we can do. The other thing that I think we can do is what we've been talking about already, is that I can do my best to make sure that the cry of the oppressed is heard.
And my thanks there to Bishop Crispian Hollis, Chairman of the International Affairs Department of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales.